Hello, welcome to Entertainment Weekly. I'm volunteer reader Diane Salisbury on Sun Sounds of Arizona. And every week I get to read from Entertainment Weekly's website, which is EW.com. You know, you might recognize that I make a big deal about having a must list. Like I'm all surprised. Oh, there's a must list. I get to read it this week. And the reason for that is because sometimes there isn't one, and that's the case this week. So, no must list for us. I'm going to jump into our reviews. I'm going to start from best to worst this time. And our best review of the week is about Straw. Taraji P. Henson has the mother of all bad days in this Tyler Perry drama. A new folk hero was born in this compelling, though not exactly subtle, movie. This is by Jordan Hoffman. As bad as it is, there's always someone doing it worse. That's just one of the pearls of wisdom dropped in Straw, now streaming on Netflix, an effectively tense action melodrama set during a particularly rotten day in which a hard-working woman who only wants to take care of her daughter finally snaps. The straw of the title is either the last one or the one that broke the camel's back, considering how rough things are, it might be both. Taraji P. Henson is immediately sympathetic as Janiyah, an exhausted single mother living in a none-too-luxurious apartment with no air conditioning, thin walls, and loud neighbors. Her motivation to keep going is her adorable young daughter, Aria, who, despite medical issues like seizures and asthma, maintains a sunny attitude. Plus, she's a kid genius, as made evident by the science project Janiyah schleps around in her bag, which is pretty soon going to be mistaken for a bomb. But before that can happen, we need a series of increasingly infuriating rough breaks. First, there are the kids making fun of Aria for not having money for lunch. Then there's the landlord who wants the back rent now, now, now. And there are the aggressive customers at Janiyah's supermarket job, her uncaring boss, played by a marvelously mustache-twirling Glenn Turman, the child services team that yanks Aria away amid much screaming and crying, and the racist cops who run Janiyah off the road and confiscate her car. She can't take it anymore. She needs the paycheck she's owed from her lousy boss, even if she's been fired. Oh yeah, and she got fired and evicted. She goes back to the supermarket to demand her pay when, wouldn't you know it, there's a robbery. In a whirl of confusion, safes are emptied, calls to the police are made, and a gun goes off. Panicked, Janiyah runs across the street to the bank where the manager, Nicole, played by Sherry Shepherd, has always been kind to her. In a bit of a fugue state, Janiyah seems to think that all will be well if she can just cash her damn check. Never mind that the check is bloody, there's a dead body at the supermarket, and she's holding a gun and an eerily bomb-like science project. Suddenly, we're in a dog day afternoon standoff situation. Cops arrive, including Tiana Taylor's Detective Raymond, who senses that this crazy situation was not premeditated and Janiyah is someone who needs help. Inside the bank, after a few people clear out, we're left with a multi-generational array of black women, all of whom have felt various degrees of Janiyah's struggle. She connects with Detective Raymond on the phone, and the hostage negotiations are put on pause so these ladies can start getting real, as if on an old episode of The Oprah Winfrey Show. People don't know how expensive it is to be poor is one of those lines that remind you why writer-director Tyler Perry is such a success. When a video leak makes its way to the internet, every city bus and barbershop is filled with people glued to their phones, nodding their heads as Janiyah expresses her struggles. Nobody cares. Nobody sees us, she cries. And that's when she morphs into a Luigi Mangione-like cult figure with sign-wielding fans calling her name outside the bank. One such sign reads, "Nevertheless, she persisted." Straw is not exactly subtle, but the emotions are so raw and the performances are so earnest that you've really got to have a heart of stone not to care for these people. And haven't we all lost our heads a little bit and done something a wee bit foolish? Sure, rushing into a bank with a loaded pistol may be a bit extreme, but it's pretty hard not to relate. As with many Tyler Perry projects, including my favorite, Boo, a Madea Halloween, there are some pacing issues. To cite one specific shallow example, it moves from day to night in about 3 seconds, making you wonder what scenes got cut out. There are also police officers and FBI agents barking at one another like opposing captains of rival high school football teams. I've never been in a hostage negotiation situation room before, but I have a hunch these people behave with a bit more professionalism. Henson's performance is big and broad, and when she starts freaking out, she really swings for the fences. Some moments don't work, going down on her knees to scream, "No!" in the rain as the camera cranes up is a bit much, and there are several sequences where you really feel her spiraling into terror. Sherry Shepherd and Teyana Taylor are both quite good as women who recognize in Janaya a there but for the grace of God go I situation, and they try to give this story an acceptable outcome. The movie has a wild, enveloping conclusion that may be a bit far-fetched for some, but it's anything but grasping at straws. That was the review of Straw. Taraji P. Henson has the mother of all bad days in this Tyler Perry drama. It was by Jordan Huffman, who's giving the movie a grade of B. Next we have Ballerina. Ana de Armas kills busloads of people in giddy, ruthless orgy of violence. So many hammers. This is also by Jordan Huffman. Handguns, rifles, machine guns, grenades, knives, axes, swords, ice skates, flamethrowers, and metal poles that just happen to be there. Ana de Armas uses all these tools and more to kill, kill, kill with barely a break in Ballerina, the absurd and slightly nauseating new entry into the John Wick franchise. She also uses her bare hands a few times, thumbs right in the eye sockets, if I'm not mistaken. But there's so much preposterous bloodshed flying all over the screen, it's hard to keep an inventory of the many gnarly ways she lays into anyone who challenges her. I can say, however, with absolute certainty, that she looks positively stunning while violently ending the lives of her foes. Whether in her red-spangled evening gown or more ninja-appropriate attire, there are sequences in this movie that are a true visual feast. What's unfortunate, however, is that Ballerina is really two different films stapled together. The first half is shockingly stultifying, a witless, airless, unoriginal slog with some occasional gruesome battles sprinkled in. About midway through, though, things turn on a dime. The movie shifts locations and sheds its connection to the rote plot that wasn't going anywhere. Now, no longer interested in being a penetrating psychological inquiry of a woman bred for violence, it bets that a Looney Tunes-like romp with endless neck snaps and pistol shots to the face is the way to go. As sociopathic as it may sound, this is very much the right choice. The story, such as it is pretty threadbare. We meet Eve as a little girl. Her father, played by David Castaneda, is a contract killer who wants to leave his tribe and is punished by the leader, played by Gabriel Byrne. Eve witnesses her father's death, and Ian McShane, from the John Wick movies, puts her in the care of the director, a Russian woman draped in silk blouses, played by Angelica Houston, affecting a must-catch-moose-and-squirrel accent. It is here where Eva grows up and is trained to become a super assassin, as we've seen in Black Widow and Thunderbolts Asterisk. Indeed, her graduation test is pretty similar to the one Florence Pugh undergoes. She starts living her best life, killing people in ludicrous ways, but inside there burns the desire to take vengeance for her father. Oh, and one day Keanu Reeves's John Wick shows up at the Academy for no other reason than to remind you that, yes, he's part of this world. Luckily, he comes back at the end. One day, Eve sees a baddie with an X brand on his wrist and remembers it from her father's death. She decides, against the director's wishes, to decipher this clue and hunt down the gang. This leads her to Prague and to Norman Reedus, as well as another little girl who reminds her of herself. Then, and this is important, she gets conked on the head and wakes up in an entirely different movie. There has been a great deal of hubbub about who directed what percentage of Ballerina. All we can point to is what's on the record. Despite Len Wiseman, who made Underworld, Live Free or Die Hard, and the Total Recall remake, being credited as director, John Wick co-creator and producer Chad Stahelski, who directed the first four films, is known to have done substantial reshoots, and they seem to be mostly in the second half. His quotes to The Hollywood Reporter on the matter are very diplomatic. All I can tell you is that the first half of the movie is a chore to sit through, even with Ana de Armas being radiant in every frame. And then, after the fade-out, there is an abundance of creativity, wit, and sparkling choreography between the performers and the camera. There's a fight on ice. There's a fight with smashed dinner plates. There's a moment when Anna shoves a grenade into a baddie's mouth. There's also John Wick coming off a train like a black-suited cowboy in a snowy alpine village, which is gripping and iconic. How to assess a movie like this in aggregate? I don't know. It's kind of like eating a meal you don't like and getting a great dessert. The more difficult question is whether or not a movie like Ballerina is even ethical. Not to sound too much like a scold, but let's be real here. It's probably not a very good idea to watch this much concentrated anti-human nihilism in one sitting. Yes, the violence is so over the top it becomes a cartoon, but there are still a lot of painful-looking hammers to the head, hatchets to the neck, dislocated limbs, and point-blank gunshots. This is weaponry pornography at a level that's probably turning our minds into mush. Just don't go into it without a warning. Like dining at Burger King, it's undeniably enjoyable, but may leave you with a queasy feeling when it's all over. That's the Ballerina review. Ana de Armas kills busloads of people in giddy, ruthless orgy of violence. It was by Jordan Hoffman, who's giving the movie a grade of C+. And then we have a review of Stick. Owen Wilson's golf comedy whiffs on laughs. In the listless new Apple TV Plus comedy, Wilson stars as a washed-up pro golfer who coaches an undiscovered teen prodigy. This is by Kristen Baldwin. Since the premiere of Ted Lasso in 2020, Apple TV has built up quite a stable of successful comedies about, as a friend of mine calls them, upbeat white men with problems. The formula worked well for Shrinking, Platonic, Bad Monkey, and The Studio, but the streamer's streak ends with Stick. The golf comedy, created by Jason Keller and starring Owen Wilson as a disgraced pro who discovers a teenage prodigy, is listless and uninspired despite its likable cast. When we first meet Price Stick Cahill, played by Wilson, he's working at a sporting goods store using his gift of gab to talk customers into buying clubs they can't afford. Once a Ryder Cup-winning pro golfer, Price lost it all after a public meltdown during a PGA Tour event in 2009. Since that outburst, which we later learn was tied to a tragedy in his past, Price has languished in a kind of self-induced emotional stasis. Today, he's perpetually short on cash and is about to be evicted from the home he's shared with his now ex-wife Amber Lynn, played by Judy Greer, who's tired of waiting for him to move on with his life. One day, while giving a golf lesson, Price spots a kid named Santi, played by Peter Daigle, pounding balls past the 200-yard marker on the driving range. Galvanized by the teen's preternatural talent and hoping for a way out of his emotional and financial slump, Price convinces Santi's protective mom, Elena, played by Mariana Trevino, to let him coach her son. After recruiting his cantankerous former caddy, Mitz, played by Marc Maron, to join them, Price hits the road with Santi and his mom in hopes of helping him qualify for the U.S. Amateur Golf Championship. Maybe it's a chance to leave something behind other than a YouTube clip of the worst day of my life, he tells Mitz. Price needs a win, and Santi, who has a complicated relationship with golf due to his absentee dad, needs a mentor and father figure. Can they heal each other through a mutual love for the game? It's a standard setup for this type of inspirational sports tale, and there's nothing wrong with that. But Stick is handicapped by predictable story beats that viewers will see coming from hundreds of yards away. It usually goes something like this. Price makes a questionable, though well-intentioned decision. Inevitably, his scheme is found out, and then someone, usually Santi, feels betrayed. It all wouldn't feel so dull if Stick allowed us to connect with its characters. From the home of Ted Lasso, boasts Apple TV Plus in the trailer, and on the surface, Stick shares a few things in common with that international hit. It's got the folk rock theme song, performed by the Ohio-based band Camp, a hero driven by tragedy, and an uplifting root-for-the-underdog storyline. The one thing Stick doesn't have, however, is heart. We're told why we should care about these characters, Price's past, Mitt's isolation after the death of his wife, Elena and Santi's lingering scars from his emotionally abusive dad, Gary. But none of it makes it off the page. There's a kind of emptiness to the writing, as though someone typed inspiring sports comedy plus golf into ChatGPT. The character of Santi's friend Zero, played by Yellowstone's Lily Kay, a gender-fluid bartender who rails against things like late-stage capitalist ideology, truly seems like it was generated by an algorithm. None of this is the fault of the cast. Wilson deploys his laid-back charisma effectively as Price, and Daigle brings a relatable blend of charming insouciance and adolescent anxiety to Santi. Though Marn is basically playing a version of the same hyper-articulate grouch he always plays, his Mitz is the only character who consistently made me laugh, whether spoiling the end of Turner and Hooch or attempting to scare off a bear at an RV campsite. But a handful of chuckles over 10 episodes isn't enough to put Stick on the comedy leaderboard, even in the upbeat white guy division. The first three episodes of Stick premiered Wednesday, June 4th on Apple TV+. That was the review of Stick, Owen Wilson's golf comedy Whiffs on Laughs, and it was by Kristen Baldwin, who's giving the show a grade of C-. Next, I have a more inspirational list. In fact, it is the 24 most inspiring movies on Netflix to lift your spirits. It's going to take up most of the rest of the time we have available, but I have a few short articles for on the back end if we need them. From tear-jerking true stories to Oscar-winning films, the streamer has inspiration to spare. This is by Chris Snellgrove and Elena Gordon. Those looking for a light bulb flash of inspiration need look no further than Netflix. The streamer knows a good uplifting cinematic moment when it sees one, and the platform offers a catalog full of documentaries, dramas, romances, and sports movies, all carefully selected to make your insides erupt with emotion and wonder. You can't predict when inspiration will strike, but you can always count on Netflix to offer a suitable streaming substitute. So, our first movie, 14 Peaks, Nothing is Impossible, from 2021. This documentary has the inspirational movie recipe memorized. Just take one ambitious climber, that's Nirmal Purja, a huge dream, trekking the world's 14 highest mountains in only 7 months, and let those simmer for about 2 hours. Beyond the pulse-quickening story, this film largely succeeds thanks to the riveting footage shot by the expedition team. The other production efforts are still impressive, but nothing beats the raw experience of walking alongside those trying to make the impossible possible. Number two, and these are all alphabetical by title, is Becoming, from 2020. After Michelle Obama's 2018 memoir became a bestseller, it was only a matter of time before it was adapted into a film. Director Nadia Hallgren had immense access to Obama, following her across a 34-city book tour and turning the introspective writing into a dynamic reflection of the author as the archetypal modern woman. As Entertainment Weekly's critic writes in the review, generally Obama comes across as she always has, commanding but approachable, thoughtful but funny, sincere but guarded. But after spending 8 years in the White House glare, that guard is understandable. At the time, Entertainment Weekly gave the movie a grade of B. Number three, The Black Godfather, from 2019. Clarence Avant, a music producer affectionately dubbed the Godfather of Black Music, mostly flew under the mainstream radar with his brilliant artistic contributions. This documentary aims to change that by chronicling an unbelievable life that reshaped the music industry and made waves in politics, discussions of race, and business. With appearances from big names like Snoop Dogg, Jamie Foxx, and even former presidents Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, this inspirational movie is the perfect send-off for Avant, who died in 2003. Next, we have The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind, from 2019. The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind may be a film about wind power, but the story runs on pure optimism. Chiwetel Ejiofor's movie follows the titular boy, played by Maxwell Simba, who is kicked out of school because his parents can't afford tuition. This doesn't keep him from secretly studying science, however, as he builds a windmill that can provide power for his humble village's broken water pump. Inspirational and innovative, this film instantly harnesses your attention and affection. The Greatest Night in Pop Music from 2024. The 80s were a different time, man. Back then, you could convince 45 of the world's biggest musical artists to spend one night recording a song with all sales intended to help fight famine in Africa. The song We Are the World, co-written by Lionel Richie and Michael Jackson, facilitated one of the biggest and most successful charitable collaborations in musical history, and the story of how that one night came to pass makes for a pretty good documentary. Narrated by the living artists who participated in the recording, the film is a shining example of what can happen when celebrities combine their platforms for good, and its relevance is particularly strong today. Littered with celebrity anecdotes and musical history, The Greatest Night in Pop is a lovely reminder of the healing powers of music and a moving tribute to the artists involved who have since died. Our sixth movie is Hustle from 2022. Guys in their 50s don't have dreams, says Adam Sandler's character Stanley Sugerman in the sports film Hustle. They have nightmares and eczema. Stanley is unwilling to admit it, but he hasn't given up on his fantasy of becoming an NBA coach, even though he's spent his life on the road working as an international scout for the Philadelphia 76ers. After finally receiving a promotion to assistant coach, Stanley is able to realize his professional ambitions and spend more time at home with his wife, played by Queen Latifah, and daughter. But when Stanley's mentor dies, precipitating a changeup in the 76ers front office, Stanley finds himself demoted back to talent scout. During a trip to Spain, he discovers Bo Cruz, played by former Toronto Raptors player Juancho Hernan Gomez, an unknown baller with an undeniable gift. But if Stanley is going to convince the league to take Bo seriously, both he and the budding athlete will need to put in some serious work. At the time, Entertainment Weekly gave the movie a grade of A-. Is That Black Enough for You? From 2022. In the age of erroneous YouTube video essays, documentaries like Is That Black Enough for You? Are more important than ever. This Elvis Mitchell feature examines Black cinema with an emphasis on 1970s blaxploitation, and interviews stars like Samuel L. Jackson, Zendaya, and Lawrence Fishburne to help bridge generations of Black performers in media. The result is a carefully crafted, inspiring record of Black excellence at the movies. Lionheart is from 2018. Though it was sadly snubbed at the Academy Awards, Genevieve Nianji's Lionheart is still a breathtaking directorial debut. The film focuses on Chief Ernest Obiagu, played by Pete Edochi, who must step down from running a company, and his daughter, Adazi, played by Nianji, who wants to take his place. But after he chooses her brother instead, the pair must reconcile their resentment and cope with the practical fallout. Like some of the best inspirational movies, Lionheart weaves a captivating portrait with threads of loyalty, loss, and heartbreak. Number 9 on the list is My Octopus Teacher from 2021. My Octopus Teacher is a story of relationships as told by a filmmaker who bonds with an octopus. Craig Foster spent a year free diving and following the animal living in a South African kelp forest. And the more he understands her underwater way of life, the better he becomes at connecting with his son. This movie may be about a sea creature, but it's also an important story of humanity that is affecting, educational, and inspiring. Number 10 is The Other Shore from 2013. Marathon swimmer Diana Nyad had a dream. to perform an unassisted swim from Florida to Cuba, a never-before-accomplished feat. Starting in the 1970s and ending in the 2010s, NIAID's pursuit of this beyond-human endeavor offers more than a portrait of a standout athlete. NIAID's journey from shore to shore also immortalized in the 2023 sports drama NIAID, starring Annette Bening and Jodie Foster, tells the story of a person striving to overcome trauma and achieve greatness at great personal cost. A tale of determination, friendship, aging on one's own terms, and the resilience of the human spirit. The Other Shore is a story that will float to top of mind when you're least expecting it. Before I get to number 11, I'm going to take a quick break here to remind everybody that you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is Entertainment Weekly, and I'm reading from their website, which is EW.com, and this is a list of the 24 most inspiring movies on Netflix right now. Number 11 is Past Lives from 2023. One of 2023's standout romantic movies, Past Lives, is the story of Nora Moon, played by Greta Lee, and Hae Soon, played by Tae Yoo, childhood friends from South Korea, but lose contact when Nora's family moves to Canada. The two reconnect at different points through their adult lives, and conversations arise about what their relationship might have looked like if they had never been forced apart. The film is semi-based on director and writer Celine Song's life, and as an Entertainment Weekly writer explains, the movie's philosophy is rooted in Inyun, a Korean concept about fate and the destined connections people make with one another in their past lives. Next, we have the movie Pele from 2021. In certain corners of the world, the name of soccer, or should we say football, star Pele is spoken with the reverence reserved for saints. Because of this star power, it's easy for even the biggest fans to lose sight of the real man, whose legend still grows by the day. Fortunately, this documentary blends interviews, games, and other archival footage into a heartfelt, honest portrait of the man behind the myth. Race is from 2016. The story of Jesse Owens, played in this biographical sports drama by Stephan James, is a fascinating one. A college athlete out of Depression-era Cleveland, Owens makes enough of an impression on his Ohio State coach Larry Snyder, played by Jason Sudeikis, for Snyder to push him toward the Olympics. But the 1936 Games, held in Berlin during the early years of the Third Reich, make for an uncomfortable setting for Owens as he attempts to fulfill his athletic dreams. The story of a young man attempting to outrun the racial and cultural forces seeking to limit his excellence, race is an important addition to the sports movie canon. Director Stephen Hopkins does a good job of allowing his subject to own his flaws and feats while still acknowledging that, as Entertainment Weekly's critic points out in their review, triumphing over Nazi athleticism didn't do much for the racism at home. At the time, Entertainment Weekly gave the movie a grade of B. Oh, Rudy! Talk about an inspirational movie. This one makes me cry every time. Rudy from 1993. Nearly a decade before Sean Astin showed his heart as Samwise Gamgee in The Lord of the Rings, he bared his soul on the field as the title character of David Anspaugh's Rudy. Inspired by a true story, this sports drama follows a young man who is determined to play football for Notre Dame. In spite of his small stature, poor grades, and lack of athletic abilities, Daniel Rudy Rudiger is the perfect Astin character, hell-bent on willing his dream into existence, While Angelo Pizzo's script can be counted on to score an emotional touchdown with viewers. Rustin is number 15 from our list. That's from 2023. Rustin is a biographical drama with an impeccable pedigree. It's directed by George C. Wolfe, produced by Barack and Michelle Obama's production company, Higher Ground, and features great supporting actors like Chris Rock and Jeffrey Wright. Colman Domingo particularly shines as Bayard Rustin, a legendary LGBTQ+ activist who helped organize the March on Washington in 1963. He's an often overlooked figure, particularly due to his sexuality, but this film helps further cement his place in American history. At the time, Entertainment Weekly gave the movie a grade of B. Shirley is from 2024. According to Regina King, there are many elements of the biopic Shirley, the story of Shirley Chisholm, the first Black woman elected to Congress and the first to compete for a presidential nomination from a major political party, that were a long time coming. King stars as Chisholm, opposite her own real-life sister, Regina King, with whom she co-produced the project. As Regina tells Entertainment Weekly, the sisters chose Shirley because we realized there were far too many people who didn't even know her name. The film more than corrects this, detailing Chisholm's inspiring attempt to secure the Democratic nomination in 1972 and drilling into the sexism and racism she had to overcome in order to win the respect of her peers. The script does an excellent job of detailing Chisholm's political career and legacy, while still humanizing her with familial and relationship issues to overcome. And now, all that history is available for you to watch on Netflix. Simone Biles Rising from 2024. Simone Biles took back her power in 2024 at the Summer Olympics, but before she ever set foot on a mat in Paris, fans got a chance to revisit her story in the first half of her four-part docuseries, Simone Biles Rising. Episodes 1 and 2 focus on Biles' mental health issues during the 2020 Olympics and her struggle to prepare for 2024. 3 and 4 concentrate on aging and injury within gymnastics and Biles' performance in Paris. If you're already nostalgic for this year's games and unwilling to wait until 2028 in Los Angeles, Simone Biles Rising is here to help you recapture some of that gymnastics magic. Skater Girl from 2021. A Netflix film based on India's growing skateboarding culture, Skater Girl tells the story of Prina, a teenager who becomes enamored with the sport after an outsider brings boards to her village. A coming-of-age movie that also explores gender roles and social norms within traditional Indian culture, Skater Girl is Prina's story, but it's also that of other young Indian girls who have been empowered by the spirit and freedom skateboarding provides. Written by sisters Manjari and Vinati Mekjani, Skater Girl is an uplifting sports drama that lands every trick it attempts. Number 19 of our list, Society of the Snow from 2023. Society of the Snow may be adapted from a nonfiction book, but this cinematic tale of a doomed rugby team's plane crash in the Andes Mountains brings several new elements to light. For one, the cast, most of them first-time actors from Uruguay, feels refreshingly authentic, while the crisp direction and artful cinematography make for a beautiful contrast with the character's cannibalistic fate. It's not for the weak of heart, but this showcase of humanity's resilience is inspirational on its own bleakly noble terms. The Theory of Everything from 2014. The name Stephen Hawking elicits certain images, but in 2014's The Theory of Everything, the world gets a closer look at the theoretical physicist before and while his health noticeably declined from a motor neuron disease. A biographical film that holds multiple love stories within, The Theory of Everything is a solid drama, but the movie's real power rests with its actors. Felicity Jones is excellent as Hawking's wife Jane, but it's Eddie Redmayne as Hawking who blows minds. Entertainment Weekly's critic writes, "It's like watching an escape artist who's bound and gagged break free from a straitjacket. What Redmayne does is breathtaking, and it never feels like a performance." At the time, Entertainment Weekly gave the movie a grade of B+. Number 21 on our list is Unbroken from 2014. Unbroken's true story is so bizarre that it sounds made up. This inspirational odyssey centers on an American athlete, played by Jack O'Connell, whose Olympic dreams are dashed first by World War II and then by a plane crash, culminating in him becoming a Japanese POW. Based on the best-selling book of the same name, Angelina Jolie's film is as visually lush as it is emotionally raw, with Entertainment Weekly's critic deeming it an oddly old-fashioned drama that is gorgeously shot and beautifully acted, and it has moments of heartbreaking poignancy. Under Pressure is from 2023. When the U.S. women's national soccer team won the FIFA World Cup in 1999, the sport changed. Women's soccer became a phenomenon, and players like Mia Hamm and Brandi Chastain became household names. But after years of dominating in international competitions, the U.S. began feeling the heat of other countries developing soccer programs. The story of how the United States women's soccer team became the team to beat, before getting beat themselves, is best expressed in their own words. The series unfolds in 4 episodes, all of which follow the players as they attempt to make it onto the squad and win the 2023 World Cup. A sports fan's dream, Under Pressure gives exceptional insight into the process, training, and mental strength required to make it onto the most famous women's soccer team in the world. Number 23 is Will and Harper from 2024. Saturday Night Live launched Will Ferrell's comedy career and turned castmates and co-writers into lifelong pals. Ferrell's nearly 30-year friendship with one of the show's former head writers changed one day when he received an email stating that the writer was transitioning to live as a woman. Will and Harper follows Ferrell and comedy writer Harper Steele as the two embark on a road trip across America to better understand their new dynamic and explore this next phase in their friendship. A road trip comedy unlike any you've seen before, Will and Harper is a conversation about show business, platonic relationships, and living one's authentic life in modern America. Since leaving Saturday Night Live, Ferrell dabbled with dramatic roles, but never has he been more human and honest than in this prescient and funny documentary. And our number 24th item on the list, Zero to Hero from 2021. Despite its jaunty title, Zero to Hero is a profound and serious story of human triumph in the face of adversity. This Hong Kong film's guiding force is So Wa Wai, played by Chung Heng Leung, a real athlete whose aspirations were nearly thwarted by cerebral spasms that made even walking difficult. Throughout the film, we see him remarkably regain his ability to run against all odds, paving the way for a major victory. If you need a truly inspirational movie, this is a solid place to start. There we have it, the 24 most inspiring movies on Netflix to lift our spirits. From tear-jerking true stories to Oscar-winning films, the streamer has inspiration to spare. It was by Chris Snellgrove and Alana Gordon. I do have some time after that list, so let's take a look at this story. Wes Anderson doesn't know if he chose Bill Murray to play God in the Phoenician scheme, but possibly God did. It just didn't seem that he was faking it. We knew very quickly he was going to be an informal God, Anderson says of his star. This is by Lauren Huff. And they have some key points summarized here. Writer-director Wes Anderson says he doesn't think he chose Bill Murray to play God in his latest film, The Phoenician Scheme, but possibly God did. He describes Murray's version of the Almighty as an informal God and says his star just didn't seem that he was faking it. And Anderson also discusses the inspiration for the film's version of heaven. There's divine casting, and then there's divine casting. In the case of Bill Murray, who plays the Almighty himself in the Phoenician scheme, it's the latter. I don't know that we chose Bill to play God, writer-director Wes Anderson tells Entertainment Weekly, pausing to gleefully add, possibly God did. Jokes aside, Anderson says the casting was a match made in heaven. What I will say is when Bill walked onto the set in his robes and his beard, he could barely move. And yet, he seemed very comfortable and he occupied his throne in a relaxed manner. It just didn't seem that he was faking it. We knew very quickly he was going to be an informal God who is creating without making a show of it. The film follows Benicio del Toro's wealthy businessman Zaza Korda, who appoints his only daughter, Liesl, played by Mia Threpleton, a nun, as sole heir to his estate. As Liesl, Korda and his tutor, kooky bug lover Bjorn, played by Michael Cera, embark together on a new enterprise. They come up against several bonkers assassination attempts, presumably from Korda's many enemies. Each time, Korda enters a sort of liminal space, a black and white heaven, where he experiences moments of personal growth and introspection. Here, he encounters Murray's God, among other things. I think some of the most important changes in Benicio's character, Zaza, are taking place during these sort of visions that he's having as he repeatedly dies or keeps getting assassinated, Anderson explains. To create this heaven, a first for an Anderson joint, he knew he wanted it all to be real. We wanted it to all exist in front of the camera, to not use computer visual effects, to have it all be there, he says, adding, and so we made it something kind of like a 360-degree stage, a set of clouds painted, sculpted, and we created a sort of biblical troupe for these scenes. Other members credited in this troupe include F. Murray Abraham, Charlotte Gainsbourg, and Willem Dafoe. I think it's sort of the way biblical settings and characters were portrayed during the Renaissance. I think that's really what we've done, Anderson adds. I mean, we're so familiar with the Renaissance representation of stories from the Bible, and ours is the black and white version of that. The Phoenician scheme, which was co-written with frequent Anderson collaborator Roman Coppola, also stars Riz Ahmed, Tom Hanks, Bryan Cranston, Matthew Almerich, Jeffrey Wright, Scarlett Johansson, Richard Ayoade, Benedict Cumberbatch, Rupert Friend, and Hope Davis. The film is now playing in theaters. That's Wes Anderson doesn't know if he chose Bill Murray to play God in The Phoenician, but possibly God did. And it was by Lauren Huff. Next, we want the best. Our demands for the forthcoming Kiss movie starring Nick Jonas. We will shout these suggestions out loud. This is by Jordan Hoffman. Earlier this week, we learned that Kiss, initially dubbed the hottest band in the land, before they upgraded to the hottest band in the world, will soon share their story on the silver screen. Shouted Out Loud, named after a particularly catchy song on their third album, is due to start production at the end of this year or early 2026. The film will be directed by McGee, the Charlie's Angels auteur whose last five movies have been Netflix releases, including Rim of the World and Family Switch. Nick Jonas is currently in negotiations to play Paul Stanley, Kiss's lead singer, but second banana to bassist Gene Simmons, whose casting remains a mystery, as spokesman for the group. We're going to be optimists and say we eagerly await the finished product. For those raising eyebrows at Jonas's casting, and the Kiss Reddit page is a good source for that sentiment, one must recognize that while Kiss is considered a hard rock group, what with their demonic face paint, leather and spiked costumes, lusty tongue-wiggling, blood-spitting, and onstage fireballs, a lot of their music is just as poppy as the Jonas Brothers material. That may sound like sacrilege, but when you break down what makes a song like I Was Made for Loving You work, you'll see it's not that different from Play My Music. Much like the Bob Dylan film, A Complete Unknown, this upcoming project is reportedly about the early days of the group, watching Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley transform from two Jewish kids in Queens, that is, Chaim Witz and Stanley Eisen, into the Demon and Starchild. We'll likely see how the pair, with guitarist Ace Frehley and drummer Peter Criss, created their flamboyant theatrical style, which mixed with simple chords and prurient lyrics, eventually led to 14 platinum albums and 75 million records sold worldwide. A Kiss movie has the potential to be a lot of fun, which is why we're going to assume that McGee and the roughly 700 listed producers on this project are eager for some notes, especially since there already was a movie, Spinning Gold, that detailed Kiss's pre-superstar years, which was pretty lousy. It was more about record executive Neil Bogart, but Kiss is a big part of his story. To that end, here's what needs to be in a Kiss movie. Several behind-the-scenes sequences detailing the production of Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park, the 1978 television film starring Kiss. For those who haven't seen it, Kiss play themselves facing down an evil inventor who keeps his secret lair in an amusement park. It's kind of a mix of The Phantom of the Opera and Westworld, and features a lot of sunny California girls and roller coasters. We would also like a songwriting scene rivaling the Mozart-Salieri conclusion of Amadeus, but with Simmons and Stanley composing the lyric, "You pull the trigger of my love gun." We also insist that they include the moment, which many believe to be an urban myth, where the members of Kiss dripped some of their blood into the vats of red ink used to create a Marvel Kiss comic book. A notary was witness to it to ensure that this really happened, and that fans who purchased a copy would know they had real Kiss DNA in their homes. Imagine reading this comic after cleansing yourself with some Sydney Sweeney bathwater soap. Another highlight would be one of Simmons' first television appearances on the Mike Douglas Show, where comedian Toadie Fields saw right through his Dracula act and the two started making Jewish jokes. We'd also like to see the notoriously pugnacious Simmons accepting the fact that the band's biggest hit was the syrupy ballad Beth, sung and co-written by Criss, and that many people believe was the best song in the entire Kiss oeuvre, as Frehley's cover of New York Groove, which Simmons had nothing to do with. There should also be a montage of Jonas belting out some of Stanley's signature screeching stage banter. There's a link here that says, "Do not click this unless you have an hour to kill and are in a location where you feel comfortable roaring with laughter. Similarly, please give us more details about The Elder, the never-produced fantasy film that gave us the uncharacteristic album Music from The Elder, Kiss's attempt to create something similar to Pink Floyd's The Wall. The film must also show Simmons and Stanley's true métier. Recording albums is one thing, but finalizing merchandising deals is where Kiss truly shined. From shirts and posters and lunchboxes and figurines to the most final of purchases, the Kiss casket. To that end, we should also see how Kiss will live forever, as the members of the group have uploaded their likenesses, and maybe their consciousness, into digital avatars. That was We Want the Best, our demands for the forthcoming Kiss movie starring Nick Jonas, and it was by Jordan Hoffman. And gosh, that wraps up our time for Entertainment Weekly this week. Thank you all for listening. I'm volunteer reader Diane Salisbury for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Please come back next week to hear what I found from their website, which is ew.com. And until then, goodbye.